This is live coverage of the Voice of the Voter debate for Monroe County Sheriff. Todd Baxter and Patrick O'Flynn will take questions from the Democrat and Chronicle, 13 WHAM News, and WXXI News. Here's your moderator, Evan Dawson.
Good evening and thanks for joining us on WXXI TV, AM 1370, 13WHAM.com, and DemocratandChronicle.com. I'm Evan Dawson, host of Connections on WXXI Radio, and I'll be moderating tonight's Voice of the Voter debate. Tonight's debate is between the candidates for Monroe County Sheriff. I will introduce the candidates in just a moment, but first, our panelists tonight, Gary Craig from the Democrat and Chronicle and Carlette Claire from 13 WHAM News. The two candidates here, are vying to be the Monroe County Sheriff. Joining us in studio are Todd Baxter, running on the Democratic Party line, and incumbent Patrick O'Flynn, running on the Republican, Conservative, Independence, and Reform Party lines. Now, some ground rules for tonight, and the candidates have agreed to this. Candidates will refrain from speaking out of order as best they can. They will adhere to the agreed upon time limits. If a candidate violates these rules, we'll give a warning. A second infraction could result in a removal from the debate, but we have a sheriff and a former police chief. I think if anyone can follow rules, these are the people who could probably do that. Here's tonight's questions format. When a candidate is asked a question, they're going to have 60 seconds to respond. The opponent will then have 60 seconds as well to respond. Any rebuttals will be at my discretion at that point. Those rebuttals will be around 30 seconds. So let's go ahead and get started with the debate. We begin with 60-second opening statements, the order of which was determined by a coin toss before we went on the air. And first, we will hear from Todd Baxter.
Well, thank you. I'm very excited to be here tonight. I thank the panel and Voices of Voter for this opportunity to share with the community our vision for the Sheriff's Department for the future. Simply put, we are not getting the vision and leadership out of the Sheriff's Department we deserve. In 2013, the Democrat and Chronicle endorsed Pat O'Flynn, but made some remarks during that endorsement. They would like to see more innovation and steer the organization in a new direction. Most of us can agree in the last 4 years, let alone the last 16 years, we haven't seen a lot of innovation out of the Sheriff's Department. I spent 22 years in the United States Army, 22 years in the Rochester Police Department, 4 years as a chief of police at a time of turmoil, and the last 3 years leading the Veterans Outreach Center. I plan to use this diversity in leadership to share my ideas and vision for the future of the Sheriff's Department in the next hour, and I look forward to hearing the questions.
Thank you, Mr. Baxter. Now, Sheriff O'Flynn.
Well, good evening, and thank you to the Voice of the Voter partners for hosting tonight's debate and for everybody watching at home for taking time to learn a little bit more about me and why I want to remain your sheriff. Under my leadership, the Monroe County Sheriff's Office has been guided by four core values: respect, integrity, teamwork, and excellence. It's through strict adherence to these core values that we've become recognized as a professional and most respected sheriff's office in New York State. Accreditation is the gold standard when it comes to measuring professionalism in law enforcement. And in Monroe County, we lead the way in every category. We're the only major county sheriff's office in New York State that's received both national and statewide accreditation. And while there's much to be proud of, my work as your sheriff is far from done. So whether it's our efforts to keep families and neighborhoods safe, maintain our high professional standards, or safeguard our seniors, I will make sure that we never lose sight of our goal. That's to keep Monroe County a safe place to live, work, and raise a family.
All right, thanks to both of you. For this first round of questions, we're going to take a look at the drug and opioid epidemic that is plaguing not only Rochester, but Western New York, and really our country. And we spoke with Geraldine Farmer, who's a voter who had some thoughts for the candidates on this issue.
I think a lot of people with drug problems really need more therapy, outpatient, and a lot of times that doesn't seem to be available to them.
You'd like to see that happen?
Yeah, I really would. I think everybody deserves a chance.
All right, so she's talking about some outpatient options for those dealing with drug issues. Let's get some thoughts from each of the candidates on this, 60 seconds each, and Todd Baxter will go first.
Well, thank you. Last year we had 169 deaths in our community. 169 citizens passed away to the opioid epidemic. That's simply unacceptable. In 2015, the Sheriff's Department had a strategic plan goal of working on this fact. And in 2016, the annual report never reflected the opioid epidemic. And in this county, we had to wait 9.5 months for the statistics to come out for the prior year. How can we possibly address a threat or a potential problem that we have without clear data? I agree with the comments made in the interview. We need more outpatient beds. I know people that are literally driving folks that want to go into detox and be helped, driving them to Batavia and Buffalo because we do not have enough beds locally. She's absolutely right there. I outlined a 4-point plan that I'll use to fight the opioid epidemic. Point one is education. There's a big gap between the DARE program and adulthood. Last year, one of those statistics was an over 70-year-old person that passed away. The second step is getting these opioids out of our house. I outlined a plan where you can call upon a sheriff's deputy and we'll go to your house and pick up these opioids, these prescriptions that are not being used. Third, we'll strategically go after the opioid dealers. They are not selling dope on the streets. They are selling poison that murdered 169 people last year. We need to specifically go after them with unique investigations. And last, recovery. Those folks, like was mentioned in the interview, that are just working so hard to stay sober, they need all the support we can give them. And we can champion that more with the Sheriff's Department to try and raise funds, raise awareness, and get people on the right track and out of this terrible epidemic.
All right, Sheriff O'Flynn, your response.
Well, the opioid epidemic actually starts in the medicine cabinet, and we look at it and are very proud to be a part of the opioid task force, because this really is not just a law enforcement problem. This is something that needs to be addressed on many levels. First, prevention. We already do, as Mr. Baxter stated, have a medical or a medicine disposal program that we have combined with CVS and our zone substations. In the education, DARE program is very important, but we also have a parental component and awareness component to be able to help people know about that through the media and such. We also get into the treatment end of it. Our jail program, we have a nationally recognized drug treatment program in our facility. Plus, we have Vivitrol to be able to help transition people out and to take away the cravings and be able to have a better transition back into the community. And then from the enforcement side, we look at our drug treatment or our drug task force with Granite. So we've been working with the opioid task force, which is comprised of drug counselors, medical professionals, educators, EMS professionals, law enforcement and prosecutors, and the crime analysts to make sure. And we've now opened up a open access center to be able to provide direct and immediate care to address the problems that the caller made to be able to get people instant access. But obviously there are bed problems in getting people enough to be able to address all of the people out there. But the new open access centers should be effective.
We're going to stay on this subject generally, and we're going to turn now to Gary Craig from the Democrat and Chronicle with a question for the sheriff on this general subject. Gary?
Sheriff, Mr. Baxter mentioned the talk of law enforcement and involvement, and obviously he said unique methodology for investigations needs to be tried. What do you see? I mean, is law enforcement doing enough in your mind on its end to fight this problem? And what more, if not, what more do you think could be done?
Oh, I think that law enforcement has to look at the arrest component of, and so we work very diligently with all the local law enforcement with our drug task force, the Granite Task Force, and being able to address that. But when it comes to the sheriff's office and what we're doing, we work very closely with the communities to be able to have inmates transition out of the facility and get the care that they need by working very closely with Huther Doyle and some of the other drug providers to make sure that they aren't just put back into the community where they started from with no support. So we've worked very closely with them. We've also worked by having every law enforcement agent or all of the deputies and officers have Narcan to be able to address the opioid problem and save lives. We've seen an incredible number of stories that it's been very effective in saving lives.
All right, Todd Baxter on that.
Thanks, good question. From a law enforcement standpoint, we mentioned Granite earlier, Greater Rochester Area Narcotics Enforcement Team. We have the same amount of manpower in the Greater Rochester Area Narcotics Enforcement Team today that we had years ago. If we're gonna fight the opioid epidemic, we need to put more resources in it. I also spoke in my plan very clearly about onboarding the DA's office and the federal prosecutor's office to look at these unique cases. We need to look at opioid overdose cases as a potential crime scene. put yellow crime scene tape around them, and treat them as a potential homicide scene so we can collect proper evidence. So when an evaluation finally comes back from the medical examiner's office, we have evidence we can prosecute for a potential homicide charge. There's a lot of work to be done. It can't be done without additional resources. You can't do the same thing and expect different results. Yeah. That's exactly what we've gotten.
Sheriff, I know you're jumping in to respond. You want to respond to some of what you just heard there? Go ahead.
I would like to respond to what I just heard, because what he's stating is already in place. We have been conducting the investigations as potential homicide cases when you have a opioid death. So the evidence is being secured, the information is being gathered and taken into evidence, and we've just started working with the DA's office to have a checklist so every one of the law enforcement agencies in the community handles it the same way.
Mr. Baxter, that's something we've heard throughout this campaign from the sheriff, that some of your proposals, he feels, are proposals that are already in place in practice. What do you say?
Quite clearly, the sheriff stated that he jumped into the opioid epidemic with both feet. We had 169 deaths last year, folks. That's not both feet. If it is, it's failure. The fact is, a lot of these initiatives are coming out since I named myself as a candidate for Monroe County Sheriff, and that's a fact. Here's another fact. The sheriff often talks about the opioid task force that meets at DePaul. That's a task force of community providers that get together and talk about best practices and ways to do it. I've yet to see the sheriff at one of those meetings. I've checked the minutes, they're readily available, and I haven't seen the sheriff at one of those. If that's one of our cornerstone objectives, I would be involved in those meetings every time. We had 169 deaths. And I applaud the DA's office for finally taking initiative to go for these cases as prosecutions for a homicide, and also keeping timely statistics. We are finally getting monthly statistics. When we got our brother and sister counties to the west and to the east, Onondaga County and Erie County, have an ongoing statistical database. You can go on the web and see what happened in the last quarter. Again, I challenge you to think about how long it took us to get 2016 numbers here in Monroe County. We have a broken system. I'm glad this competition that we're having is pushing it forward, and I'll continue to push it forward. We can't afford another 169 deaths.
We're going to have Carla Claire from 13WAM on this subject, but I have to be fair, let the sheriff respond. Have you attended those meetings? He's saying he's checked the minutes and he has not seen that you've been there.
We have had representatives at every one of these meetings, and I have worked with the DA's office and all of the providers very, very closely. I run the jail. They are in there, they are supporting, so I do have daily in weekly contact with all the providers.
Personally, have you been to these meetings?
I have not been to the meetings, but we've had representatives that have briefed me on all of the what's transpired.
And Todd, he's going to say you can't be everywhere at the same time when you're the sheriff. Is that fair? He's got representatives there even if the sheriff is not there.
Well, Evan, I go back again. This is the biggest epidemic we've had in the history of all our lives. 169 people, that's trending up. The President of the United States was on the edge of declaring this a national emergency. Everybody's talking about it. As a sheriff, you should represent at one of those meetings, if not all the meetings, to give the clout of the sheriff's office to those meetings, to bring the resources of the sheriff's office to those meetings, and bring the legitimacy of this problem to those meetings. It's the largest law enforcement agency in Monroe County. It's the lead law enforcement officer in Monroe County. If this is the biggest problem we've had in years, you need to be participating in that process.
All right, let's turn to Carla Claire from 13WAM News. Carla?
This question is directed to Mr. Baxter. According to a Washington Post article, the opioid epidemic is changing the face of policing. Lots of deputies are turning into social workers, doctors, and even operating as counselors. But then conversely, we have critics who are saying that addiction is a disease and it should be treated by healthcare professionals. What is your position on this, as they're saying that law enforcement should not have a role in this or the judicial system, and why?
Thank you. Law enforcement definitely has a position in here in the opioid epidemic and the crisis that we're facing. Who is usually the first responder to an incident? Whether it's a criminal possession of a controlled substance arrest, that you have an offender in the backseat of your car with a bag of opioids and a needle, that's the first line right there. You got a person when they're at their lowest of low, and that's when all the treatment providers say you need to catch these people at the lowest of low to hopefully intervene in their life. So I don't want police officers to be counselors and mental health counselors or drug addiction counselors, but definitely be well-versed in the opioid epidemic and well-versed in some other things we can do alternative to incarceration. Those are great options when you got that person. Other options are for family members. Who else are you going to call at 3 o'clock in the morning when your kid is missing, you believe they have a heroin addiction, and you call local law enforcement for some advice or some counseling? Of course, we're not mental health counselors or opioid addiction counselors, but we do respond to those types of calls. And the more versed we are as police officers in that, the more we can assist the public, both as from a person that's addicted to a family member that's just screaming out for help.
Sheriff O'Flynn.
Well, I do believe law enforcement has a role. However, the as far as the lead role, I don't know if this is necessarily the case. I have to agree with the individual there because the collaboration is what is key. Having people come together, address the problem, and again, not just from an enforcement standpoint. We look at it from, as I said, the jail. We end up dealing with it because we have control over that environment and the individuals there. But when it comes to the counseling and the medical needs and getting people educated, both the individuals and the people they live with, to understand what's going on in that person's life and what they can do to be able to save a life if a situation happens. Also, your EMS technicians, making sure that they are working together with you along with the prosecutors and the crime analysts to be able to track these situations to be sure that we are gathering the information and being as effective as we possibly can, identifying a particular drug that is causing the fatalities.
On this subject, one more question, and it starts with Sheriff O'Flynn. And along these lines, as you talk about sort of the layers of what's causing this problem and what to do about it, some communities are looking at experimenting with allowing heroin users, for example, to use in a controlled setting, to be monitored, to say, look, if you have an addiction you're going to use, we want to know where you're using it. And they're looking into whether they're allowed to do that and whether they should. Would you support that? Should that be looked at?
That becomes very problematic for a community. Because now you're going to be having a lot of people coming in from all over. And I know that they were trying it down in the Ithaca area to look at the option of being able to have people feel more freely in having it controlled in a safer environment. Obviously, we want safety. However, when you're dealing with some of these drugs that are coming in from China and nobody knows what the dosages are and they aren't well maintained, fentanyl and some of the other additives that are going into them become very problematic, and it can be, you know, a deadly situation that someone's going to have to oversee and take responsibility for. I think there's got to be a lot more planning effort and look-see before you go into something like that.
Okay, Mr. Baxter.
I do not agree with the idea of creating an environment that people can go up and shoot up heroin and poison that killed 169 of our residents last year. The fact is, it's condoning the experience. I've talked to loved ones that have lost their family members to this terrible epidemic. I've talked to them personally about this subject, and I haven't found one yet to agree that this is a good idea. There needs to be more beds for outpatient treatment, inpatient treatment. There needs to be more people working on the recovery. There needs to be more strategy put into the enforcement, all those things we outlined. But to sit back and condone the exercise of shooting up, I think is sending the wrong message for people that are fighting to stay off this drug. Again, people I don't think quite understand, this is an addictive drug, and we need to be working so much harder on getting people to prevention, enforcement, and the recovery. And I don't think this is a good idea.
All right, we're going to take next a question that was submitted online, and it comes from Anna in Pittsford. Her question is the following. We've heard about adding more minorities to the force, but what about women in supervisory positions? And she says there are zero women that are lieutenants, captains, or majors, and there haven't been in a long, long time. There's only 6 or 7 sergeants that are women, 2 or 3 investigators, and a handful of corporals. That's less than 2% of the agency. How are you going to change the good old boy network? Now, I got to say, I don't know if those numbers that Anna in Pittsford are citing are exactly accurate, but I understand the focus of the question. I will start with Todd Baxter on this. How do you feel about her comments there, and what would you do about it, Todd?
Well, I think our numbers are accurate based on my study. There's never been a command level leadership position in the Sheriff's Department of a female. There's never been a leader in the Sheriff's Department that has been female. I find that almost impossible in this day and age of law enforcement. The fact is, you got to recruit people into your organization, and by doing that, you represent them at the top of the organization. If you want females to come into your organization or other diverse members to come into your organization, it's good to represent them at the top of the organization. I'm not a numbers person where I need 2 of these, 3 of these, 4 of those, but we believe diversity, and I believe diversity brings a lot to an organization. That's a fact. Second, if you look at my experience in the Greece Police Department, when I left the Greece Police Department, almost 10% of the organization was female. I'm very proud of that. It brings diversity to your organization that we need, and also brings different thought processes, brings different ways of looking at things. I'm a true believer in diversity in the organization.
All right, Sheriff O'Flynn, are Anna's numbers accurate, and how do you feel about it?
the numbers are not accurate, nor are Mr. Baxter's statements. We had a major who retired. I promoted her, and that was one of the top and the first individual females to receive that rank in Monroe County. Plus, we have 175 sworn females in our organization, and 20% of our entire staff is female. I've got two attorneys that are both female, and the big number of staff that in the support center that are females. We have 14 females that are in supervisory positions. So I don't understand the numbers as far as they were being delivered here, but I feel that we have decent representation. You always can do better when it comes to diversity, and that's what we strive to do.
If you're just joining us, this is the Voice of the Voter debate with the candidates for Monroe County Sheriff. I'm Evan Dawson, and you can follow the discussion on Twitter using the hashtag VOVDebate. We will start this next round of questions by talking about police community relations, and Eric Nagel has a question for both of our candidates regarding their methodology of policing.
Policing, and specifically, has to be a very community-based job, and the relationships that they have with the different communities and understanding different points of view, the empathy of understanding people and why they do the things that they do is way more important than the study of criminology or anything that they can teach you at John Jay University. Everybody does something for a reason, and as such a leader in the field of criminal justice, they should ask themselves why they really want to do it. Is it because they want to make people safe? Maybe that's not the best thing. Maybe the best thing is I want to help all people in general, and what's the best way I can do this with the tools I'm given? So what tools do you have that really are for the community and not just for being a police officer?
We'll start with Sheriff O'Flynn on that one. Go ahead, Sheriff.
We train all of our people, and we lead with our core values of respect, integrity, teamwork, and excellence. And we make sure that our staff treats everyone with respect. I think that's the cornerstone of being able to have good police community relations. We also get into the schools right off the bat with life skills training and a DARE program and life skills training, and then drug awareness and citizen police academies for adults and parents, and then safety programs for adults. So we're constantly interacting with the community to make sure that they understand where we're coming from, giving them an option to see exactly how we're trained on a daily basis and what our job entails. We've also worked and spent a lot of time working with faith leaders to build and strengthen the relationships in our neighborhoods and in their congregations. So I'm very proud of where we are in this community. We're very fortunate to have the excellent relationships that we have in this community, not like some of the other communities where you've seen the strife.
Okay, Mr. Baxter.
I had the opportunity to take over the Greece Police Department in 2010, an organization that was defunct and lost the faith of the community. Over the next 4 years, we were able to build back community trust by doing one simple thing, person-to-person relationships. It takes an ability to get your officers out of the cars and into the community, to walk the beat. It takes the ability of the chief or the sheriff to get out of the car, get out of the office, and walk the beat also. I've always led by example. I believe in community policing 100%. I believe before it was a term, every good cop did it. Every cop knew that they were policing a community, they were serving a community. They weren't in the community as a tyrant, they were in the community to serve and give back. And every good cop knows if you want information, you want to develop relationships, you want to be a good police officer, you got to interact with the community in a positive mode. I lead by example when it comes to that. I also believe police officers need empathy. And I lead by example on that also. I think that's a very important part. You know, policing in the 21st century was a national study done that talks about community relations. And policing in the 21st century had four pillars, and the most important pillar was communication and transparency of your police department. To be in the community and share daily crime data, to share information, to be in the community and share when things are going right and applaud your police officers for what they're doing builds the trust. But also when things go wrong, if you want to build community relations, you have to be transparent with your public. You have to let them know that mistakes are made and that you're correcting them, you're taking advantage of them. You can't be wishy-washy in that stuff. The public sees it and reads it. I will use social media, and I'll also use my feet to be out in the community and build community trust. That's what community policing is all about.
All right, our next question comes from Gary Craig, and it will be to first Todd Baxter. Gary.
Yes, Mr. Baxter, I want to circle back to something that was said earlier. This question is obviously really for both of you. The issue of diversity. You had your years at the Greece Police Department, obviously, at the helm there for 4 years. And Sheriff, when it's your turn, I'd be interested in your answer to this, too. What did you do to build diversity there? What were the results? And do you think there's more that could have been done?
Absolutely. When I left the Greece Police Department, we had 2 African-Americans and 1 Hispanic officer. We built the organization from 78 officers back up to 100 officers. Is that acceptable numbers? No. The unfortunate part, but not an excuse, is that we're hiring off a town list. They gave me a few thousand people of color to recruit from. If I had my way, I'd recruit off the countywide list, which gives you over 250,000 minorities to recruit from. Opening up that pool will give us a much better chance. The other fact is I did recruit females into the organization, and I'm very proud of that, as I stated earlier. I also tried to promote the only African-American that was on the eligible list for promotion. I fought with our town board tooth and nail to try and get that officer promoted to sergeant. I wasn't successful, but I'm very proud of my fight. I'll fight for officers, and I'll fight for diversity. That's what I do.
Sheriff O'Flynn.
Everyone is recruiting from the same pool of candidates, and Mr. Baxter brought up a good point as far as the civil service process. It is something that needs definite reform. In fact, we've been working with the state legislature to try to see if that can get done. I can honestly say that I have hired every single minority candidate that made themselves eligible, and I'm very proud of that fact. We've been working with the Rochester Educational Opportunity Center downtown. We've had a cadet program at Edison Tech. We've started a trainee program back years and years ago that works through the colleges to maybe, when we get good minority candidates in the pool, to keep them employed so they can continue on and work in our organization. We've done outreach through Unite Rochester and through the Democrat and Chronicle to be able to get the best candidates and increase the numbers. Obviously, we're all pulling from the same pool, so if we can get more of the churches and the neighborhoods and the groups and committees to come together to bring candidates to the pool, then we can all benefit and have a diverse labor force that represents the community we serve.
All right, the next question comes from Carlette Claire from 13 WHAM News, and Sheriff O'Flynn will respond first.
4 years ago, the acquittal of George Zimmerman and the death of Trayvon Martin sparked the national Black Lives Matter movement to express the frustration and outrage of black men dying at the hands of law enforcement. Conversely, in the wake of Dallas and Baton Rouge shootings of law enforcement, that brought out the Blue Lives Matter movement to talk about the importance and value of policing. Can you just share, you know, where do you stand on this issue and why? And if you see if there's any common ground between the two movements and what you would do in particular to try to make that happen?
Well, I believe that all lives matter. And people are going to have their own opinions, and they're going to have and want to express them. And people should be able to do that. This is one of our rights, is to be able to express yourself, as long as it stays within the confines of the law, so we don't have illegal behavior, people getting assaulted, and problems in the community. Now, as far as supporting one or the other, if people are coming out and attacking, it doesn't matter if they're police or if they're citizens out there, everybody deserves the right to be able to live and enjoy life and not have someone else infringe on their rights. So I, as far as my opinion on the different groups, if as long as they stay within the confines of the law and are not violating other people's rights, I feel that they have the right to express themselves.
Okay. Go ahead, Carlette.
How would you, in community policing, bring both parties together? Because you are out into the community dealing with citizens, and citizens have to deal with police, but to make sure that the respect is there, making sure that deputies have the sensitivity training, as well as there's also implicit biases and so forth on both sides.
Oh, sure. In fact, we do train all of our deputies on sensitivity and understanding the different cultures and what you know is appropriate and not appropriate behavior. We've also been working, as I said, through Unite Rochester to work with some of the community leaders, some of the neighborhood leaders to encourage the dialogue, making sure that everybody is talking. When you talk out problems, you reduce the tension that occurs. And as long as you're open and honest in discussing things, we can address these problems and get them solved.
Mr. Baxter.
I think it's very important that we realize that there's extremes in any movement. And we've seen the Black Lives Matter be taken over by extremists in certain situations. We've seen the Blue Lives Matter yelling back. We got people that are so frustrated in America. It's simply amazing. What I did is I actually went and sat down with folks that are different than me. I sat down with folks that have different opinions. And I challenged myself to go talk to a couple of community members that are in the Black Lives Matter movement. I sat down with them at a cup of coffee, and I got some information I didn't have, because Fox News and CNN were not telling me. They were just telling me why we hate each other. But when you sit down and you have a cup of coffee with someone, you sit down and have dialogue, you find that maybe there's some common ground, that people want peace, that people want to be respected, that people want past grievances to be heard and to be understood. Those are some of the movements. Also, it was very interesting to talk to them about what police officers feel and how they feel and how they feel threatened after Baton Rouge and Dallas. And they can accept that also. Those important relationships are built on one-on-one sometimes, and getting out and meeting people that are different, but also going in environments that are not comfortable. And that's what I have done, and that's what I plan on doing in the future. There will be more organizations in the future that might have contention with police officers. We have to go meet with these folks now and build a relationship. Here's a great organization right here in Rochester as an example. The YWCA runs a program called Person to Person. I attended the Person to Person program. I spent 6 months communicating with a person that was totally different from me. African-American, female, lawyer, whose organization may sue police departments. And I had conversations with this lady during the Ferguson incident. And I can still remember the text messages I got, and they weren't fun. But the fact is, we were able to share dialogue throughout that whole experience and learn a bit from each other as we moved through it. And to this day, we're friends, and I'm very proud of that. That's how we build the relationship now. And you got to build that goodwill with your law enforcement officers by getting out and meeting the community in difficult, non-difficult environments. So when the difficult environment occurs, we have the goodwill built up.
All right, Mr. Baxter, the next question is going to start with you, and that's an extension of that. When you have these kind of coffee meetings, I imagine sometimes individual specific incidents do come up. And there have been some high profile incidents. You can point to Minnesota. You can point, as you said, to Baton Rouge, Dallas. You can look at North Charleston, obviously Ferguson. Is there a single case that you think does exemplify why the Black Lives Matter movement is doing what they're doing? In other words, is there a case where you can say, look, that's a case where the officer was wrong?
Yeah, you recall the shooting in South Carolina where an African-American gentleman was running away and he was shot in the back. You know, I have a hard time sitting down and explaining how that could possibly occur. The fact is, it's very difficult to Monday morning quarterbacks when they're quarterback incidents that are 1,000 miles away. But here's what I share with folks that I talk to. I share them with how police officers are trained. I share them with the deadly physical force policies. I try and take them out to the academy, and I've done that, to show them judgmental shooting scenarios and show them video-based training that police officers go through, to at least show them the comprehensive training that we go through in a local level. I think there's a reason why we haven't seen such horrific incidents here in Rochester in this community is because of the level of training we have here. And it's very important, but also to get the community involved in our training and understand. I'm a big proponent of getting people in our cars and doing ride-alongs and experiencing what it feels like to pull someone over at 3 o'clock in the morning with the flashing lights and you gotta approach that driver's side window. That's a very difficult environment on TV as opposed to being real life in a patrol car. I'm a big proponent, again, of building that relationship ahead of time. So are there incidents? Yeah, and I fall back continuously on the word training. We cannot train enough. The incidents that we do see across America are probably could use a lot more training on the police officer standpoint, but also training with the community of what we do for a living.
All right, Mr. Baxter, thank you. Sheriff O'Flynn, is there a specific case that you can point to that says, yeah, that's a case where obviously the officer was wrong?
No, similar to what Mr. Baxter said, the one where you saw the person shot in the back, it is hard to justify that. It is hard to even understand how the officer, because I know the training. I used to teach firearms in the academy. So I know what we're taught, at least from the police perspective, and to understand what the community expectations should be. And as we said earlier, the person-to-person program, we started it. I was involved with it under Mayor Bill Johnson. And I was with a black female educator from St. John Fisher, and we didn't understand each other at first, but the more you talk to people, the more you engage, the barriers start to come down and people start to understand each other. But training is the key. We deal with the jail environment on a daily basis. People are coming in there. They're obviously agitated. They don't want to be in the jail. Our people are trained to the best they, and we're accredited for by the state and nationally on our jails and how well that they run. So we're obviously getting the training and making it effective.
All right, we've got another question that was submitted by a citizen online. Nancy in Henrietta asks the following. She said, I'd like to ask Sheriff O'Flynn about the contract that Mr. Baxter claims that you didn't try to get a favorable contract for the deputies and 40 quit because of it. But who's really responsible for contracts, and did you get a favorable increase or not? Sheriff O'Flynn.
The county had, it's a dual part process. We're co-employers, the county and the sheriff. I am responsible for the management rights of the contract, and the county administration is responsible for salary and benefits. Where we had the problem with this, the union took the contract to binding arbitration. The arbitrator, in a shocking decision, came back and took 50% of the benefits in retirement away from the union members. I was appalled, I was shocked that we never expected that to occur. So I went to the county executive and says, look it, you gotta do something. These people are hurting and we need to stay competitive and be able to recruit and retain the best. So I did go behind the scenes, not in public. There was no sense in trying to embarrass or humiliate the county executive. We were able to work it behind the scenes, and we were able to get a good contract for those employees.
Okay, Mr. Baxter.
The sheriff has just simply stated that he's not part of the contract negotiations when it comes to benefit and pay, and then he just said he worked behind the scenes. Which one is it? Here's the fact. Because of a bad contract that wasn't negotiated, over 40 senior road deputies left. That's one-fifth of the organization. That's 800 years of experience. Sergeants, detectives, canine officers left our organization. That left a glut of experience that's going to take years to make up. Other unions haven't had a contract in 5 years. The police bureau and the court bureau have not had a contract in 5 years. Members are leaving the organization because they don't feel appreciated and they haven't had a pay raise. We cannot afford, as taxpayers, to have those employees leave, experienced employees leave, and then we have to recruit, train, equip, and gain experience for new police officers or court deputies or jail deputies to come on board. It's too expensive. We need to sit down, and as a lead law enforcement officer, as a sheriff, I will negotiate for contracts. I will push for contracts because that's the business model. You want good employees, you need to recruit them with good contracts. You want to retain good employees, you need to have good contracts. It's not just management rights, which are very important, but it's also retaining good people and recruiting good people with good contracts. It's got to be fair for the taxpayer, but it also, you have to be part of that negotiation process. So I have been part of the negotiation process, both with the Rochester Police Department and as the chief of the Greece Police Department. I sat at the table. I fought for management rights, but I also fought for what I thought was fair for both the taxpayer and my police officers and what they needed.
All right, Sheriff O'Flynn, I know you want to respond. Go ahead.
Correct. Mr. Baxter was inaccurate. The Road Patrol does have a contract. So do two of the other unions that we bargain with or negotiate with. And the court and the jail are reached agreement. Their leadership reached agreement with the county, and then were unable to get it ratified by the membership. So we have been working on it, and I'm very confident that we will be able to have these contracts settled.
All right, so just 30 seconds each on this because we've got a lot more ground to cover, but here's why this matters. It matters if you work in the Sheriff's Department. These issues obviously matter, but it matters to the public too because Sheriff O'Flynn, your opponent has said this is part of a morale issue, that these are the issues that have maybe brought down some of the morale that he's heard about in the department. You don't see a morale issue.
I absolutely do not see a morale issue. If you look at what a morale issue would be, it would be evident in how people are being treated. Are we getting citizen complaints? No, we're not. Are they coming to work on time? Yes, they are. Are they calling in sick? No, they're not. All of the performance issues that we look at are not, nothing is indicating any morale issue. And if you talk to the deputies, sure, there's frustrations when you want, when you have your time frame in your mind as to when you feel the contract should be settled, but they are getting the work done. They're doing it very professionally, and I'm very proud of the staff and all of the bureaus.
Okay, Mr. Baxter, is there a morale issue that you hear about?
Absolutely. I talked to the deputies. They indicate a morale issue. The fact is they just voted to fail. They failed to endorse the sheriff from the road patrol, the court bureau, and the jail bureau, have not endorsed the sheriff, the unions. I think that's a statement of lack of confidence that he's going to push forward and take care of the troops. Listen, where I come from, the leader eats last. And you need to negotiate good contracts and push for what the deputies need. The fact is we've lost how many, 80, 90 employees in the last few years that we had to hire back. If that's not an indicator of a morale issue, I don't know what is.
Okay.
We had people lose good jobs. They didn't want to leave, they had to leave. That's a morale issue.
All right, to be fair, the sheriff's ready to jump in one more time. Go ahead.
Right. First, Mr. Baxter left the Greece Police Department with two outstanding contracts. So I think it's disingenuous to be pointing and saying that the individuals in my organization are not happy. And I would not encourage our, and in fact, I've talked to our deputies and unions in the past and said, I don't think it's a good idea for you to endorse a candidate in the sheriff's race or in the county executive's race.
You asked them not to endorse.
I said I would have you consider this, not endorsing anyone, because it can only be problematic if your horse in the race doesn't make it.
Okay, and Mr. Baxter, he's saying that you left contracts outstanding, that there's maybe some hypocrisy there. What do you say to that?
When I left the Greece Police Department, I left 3 months after the new year. We had a new town supervisor coming on board, and things were slow in the negotiation process. But those contracts that he refers to were months old, not 5 years old. That's apples and oranges, not comparable.
All right, so if you're just joining us, this is our Voice of the Voter debate with the candidates for Monroe County Sheriff, Todd Baxter, the Democrat, the incumbent, Patrick O'Flynn, Republican. And we're going to get back to more questions asking about immigration and sanctuary cities. Todd Baxter is going to be first to respond. We're going to start with Gary Craig from the Democrat and Chronicle. Gary?
Mr. Baxter, Democrats in the Monroe County Legislature have proposed that the county be basically a sanctuary county. Just interested in your thoughts on that, whether you would agree with that or not.
Go ahead, Todd.
Thank you. We've been talking about immigration in American society for years and years. And the fact that the federal government has not passed comprehensive immigration law has caused confusion all the way down to the local law enforcement officer. When you have towns, cities, and counties talking about sanctuary cities, that only confuses the local law enforcement officer, and it confuses people that are walking around our communities. They're treated differently on one side of a boundary to another. I don't think it's wise policy to create sanctuary cities. I think it's wise policy to force our federal legislators to pass comprehensive law and then let law enforcement pass or enforce those laws. Here's the other point. We're local law enforcement. We don't enforce immigration law. That's a federal agency that does that. And we will continue to enforce law as we need, but we gotta be careful that we're not becoming law enforcement to do federal jobs. We don't enforce law for the ATF, the FBI. We do go when they call us, but we don't go and enforce their laws for them.
Okay, Sheriff O'Flynn.
My responsibility is to follow and enforce the law. And we don't pick and choose the types of laws or the sections of laws that we're going to enforce or not enforce. If we arrest an individual on criminal charges and discover that they have an immigration status problem, then we contact the Border Patrol. And we work effectively with the Border Patrol to make sure that those issues are addressed. As I said, my primary responsibility is enforcing the law and the safety of the residents of Monroe County. So properly identifying and preventing criminal activity is the key element in keeping people safe.
Sounds like both of you are interested in the enforcement part and less in the policy. Is it fair to say you're both neutral on what the Democrats in the county legislature are proposing there? Mr. Baxter, yes?
Yeah, I don't think it's wise that we keep on creating sanctuary this, sanctuary that. When you have a multi-jurisdictional organization like a sheriff's department or state police, you're confusing law enforcement officer what side of a boundary they're on. That's not good. That's not good policy.
Okay, so it sounds like you're opposed to it.
I am.
Okay, I'm sorry for that. And Sheriff O'Flynn?
Absolutely opposed to sanctuary cities or sanctuary counties or sanctuary states, I think we're even looking at now, at least that's the term that's going around.
Just to clarify, sometimes the moderator doesn't do a good job listening. Thanks to both of the candidates there for clarifying. Carlette Claire from 13 WHAM has the next question. Carlette, go ahead.
There have been a number of violent crimes committed by parolees, raising great concern within the community. The city of Rochester has partnered and made an agreement with the Department of Corrections to be able to have access to parolee information, as well as the authority to jail absconders. How would you address and handle the growing concern of parolees committing crimes? And would you be willing to partner or make an agreement with the Department of Corrections to also have that access to information?
All right, Sheriff, you start.
Sure. Parole violators have been a problem in this area, and there's far too many parolees that are committing violent crime. We work together with some of the local law enforcement agencies, and I actually took the lead with the New York State Sheriff's Association to represent statewide this issue on parole reform. State legislature needs to look at better tracking for law enforcement, so you know who you're dealing with instantaneously. Instant access to parolee information, charges, what the restrictions are. Better oversight of parolees, and that means probably a few more staff out there to be able to support the effort, and more restrictions on the use of parole. Look at, I run the jail, and parole is a major concern. Take today, for instance. We had 161 parole violators in the jail. That's done parole violations only. We had 116 that are brought in on new charges with a parole violation. And then we had 20 that are waiting to go back to the state because they've had their parole hearings. So there's 297 people on parole out of a total population of jail population of 1,288.
Okay, Mr. Baxter.
First of all, it's not the parole officers. We all agree that they're overworked. Their demand is too much. There's not enough parole officers out there to address all the people that are on parole. The system is broken. We've known it for years. As of recent, Monroe County's come from the poster child for parole violations with some horrific crimes that we've had committed in our community by parole violators, horrific crimes. And they can be addressed by a proper parole system. Here's some simple examples that we could do that. Open access to information, like we're gaining in the city. The ability to detain, a law to detain. If a police officer has probable cause to believe a violator's in violation of his parole conditions, he should be able to detain that person, not let him back on the streets to commit one of these horrific crimes we're so familiar with. Here's the point I'm making, though. We've been talking about this system for years and years and years. Leadership would have been fighting for this in Albany years ago. I'm so proud of the sheriff for fighting for it now, but we've known about this for years and years. I would champion anything we could do with this broken parole system, including additional resources for parole officers and additional access to data. We have been talking about this way too long. It's like the opioid dose. It's the definition of madness. We keep on talking about the same things. Where's been the leadership for the last 15, 16 years? This is nothing new.
All right, the next question is going to come from Gary Craig, but one quick follow-up to be fair to the sheriff, because Mr. Baxter several times tonight has painted a picture in which you may agree roughly on some issues, but he's essentially claiming that you adopted these positions in the heat of a campaign, that with your leadership over several terms, that you could have done more, as he just said with parole, for example. What's your response to that?
Well, parole is a state-run operation. We have been pushing to have them increase their numbers and be able to be more effective in managing and oversight. And I have been very active, and it hasn't been just during the campaign. As I said, we've been working with the local agencies, and I've been a leader in the sheriff's office. I was the president of the association. I was a leader in the sheriff's office or sheriff's association in addressing this as one of their big legislative issues.
Okay, and Mr. Baxter, final thoughts there? Go ahead.
Well, if I was the leader of the Sheriff's Association, I had that ear of Albany, I was the lead law enforcement officer of Monroe County, I can guarantee I'd be pushing harder, pushing faster for more resources and better legislation. The fact is, just like the opioid epidemic, we've been talking about this way too long. Leadership is just that, taking the bull by the horns and getting some things done, not talking about it. Where's the results? You can look across our community. Look at the beautiful lady killed on South Avenue. What have we done for these folks different in the last 10, 15 years? What have we done different?
right, next question from Gary Craig of the Democrat and Chronicle for Todd Baxter first.
Yes, I'm going to play panelist prerogative here and switch gears a little. Since its implementation, the SAFE Act has been very controversial. I'm interested from both of you, if you favor the act as it now is, if you oppose it, if the latter, do you think it should just be repealed outright, or sound like repeal and replace here, or if it could be improved with the current foundation, the legal foundation as it now exists?
Well, the SAFE Act is the law of the land for New York State. There's some parts of the SAFE legislation that I'm not very, very fond of. And I would champion looking at some of those processes through a legislative process. As a sheriff, I would push for more legislation that includes tools we need. We call this law the SAFE law. What does the prosecutors need locally? What does the chief of police and the sheriff's association need locally to make our community safer? When we write comprehensive law that includes these people as decision makers and input, we'll have more success in law. Here's an example. I've been to Albany many times pushing for legislation and advantages for veterans community. You go there and you go across party lines. You don't talk on party lines. You go across party lines and say, these are the tools. This is what we need back in our community to get things done. The SAFE legislation is another example. Are there things we can put on the law books to make our community safer? Absolutely. But we got to go there. We got to approach the legislators, and we got to give them our mind and give them our input. That's the problem with the SAFE legislation, and I would go back to Albany and say, here's the tools that we need in our community.
All right, Mr. Baxter, before we go to Mr. Sheriff O'Flynn, in 20 seconds or less, just to give people a sense for it. What's your own firearm ownership, and how often do you shoot?
So I am a firearm owner. I'm a proud firearm owner. I teach people how to shoot. I shoot quite often. I'm a hunter. So I'm not going to say how many guns I have in my house, but I do enjoy shooting. I do enjoy teaching other people to shoot and be able to protect themselves. I'm a big fan of training and educating people also in the laws of the state of New York when it comes to personal defense, Article 35 of the New York State Penal Law. Whenever I teach someone how to shoot a gun, I make sure they understand the law and how culpable they are if they don't follow the law and what they can do to defend themselves.
Okay. Sheriff O'Flynn, go ahead. Why don't you start with the general question on the SAFE Act, where you stand, if you would like to see it repealed, and thoughts on enforcement.
Absolutely. The SAFE Act was not well thought out. It was passed in the dark of the night. And it actually had, for the first couple months, all of my deputies on the road patrol were illegal according to the SAFE Act because of the ammunition restriction that was put in that. Sheriffs across the state, and I was one of the leaders with Sheriff Virts in Wayne County, championed the cause of being able to get some of those parts of the SAFE Act changed. The restrictions really have not been effective. As far as I can count on one hand the number of people that have been killed with legally owned weapons, all of them are being killed by illegal weapons, and the SAFE Act is, you know, just addressing the issues for people that are willing to stay within it and abide by the law. So.
And what about your own firearm ownership, real briefly, and your thoughts on shooting?
I have handguns. I have a shotgun. But I don't hunt, but I was a firearms instructor for many years and enjoyed and became competent at it. So I feel that safety is the big thing, and that's what I did throughout and taught family and everyone else to make sure that everyone is safe around the weapons.
We've got to get this done in the last 90 seconds. So Carlette Claire from 13 WAM, and then we're going to have tight answers. Go ahead, Carlette.
The National Alliance of Mental Illness estimates 15% of men and 30% of women in U.S. jails have some sort of mental health illness. How would you address your staff in the community in dealing with persons with mental health issues, particularly deputies having to make split-second decisions?
And Sheriff, we've got to do it in about 30 seconds. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, we already have a process in place. It's called crisis intervention training that we work with the local mental health providers and train the deputies to be able to be familiar out in the streets. We deal with this on a regular basis in the jail, and when it comes to co-occurring situations with drugs and mental health issues, we deal with that on a regular basis. I've been working with Dr. Eric Kane from Strong, and he says that we're the number one mental health provider in the community. Strong is number two. He's openly said that. So we've been dealing with this. We've trained our people to be able to address it.
All right, Todd Baxter, 30 seconds. I know.
Every call a police officer goes on, if you think about this, has some kind of mental trauma going on. almost every call a police officer goes to. We need to do a much better job training all our deputies and our patrol officers in the area on mental health and make sure they can recognize and find right ways to divert people, maybe not a mental hygiene arrest, but diversion to other programs. The other thing that concerns me, and the jail is filled, like they said, with folks that are statistically high and having mental health complications. I think you need to talk a lot about vicarious trauma, too, and how that's rubbing off on the deputies. If you can self-care and take care of yourself, you're much better to be able to take care of the clients that are inside the jail.
All right, we've come to the end of tonight's debate, and we are now going to give each of the candidates 60 seconds to deliver a closing statement of their choice, the order of which was determined by a coin toss before we went on the air tonight. Sheriff O'Flynn is up first.
Well, thank you again to the Voice of Voters for hosting tonight's debate and for everyone at home for tuning in. Although much has changed across the world and right here at home since I took over as sheriff in 2001, my commitment to this community has never wavered. I'm confident that we are better prepared today than any time in history to address the challenges and threats that we may face in this community. We implemented a four-pronged strategy to effectively combat the opioid epidemic, and we are providing our deputies with the latest training and equipment to keep them safe. We are working directly with our senior citizens to protect them from fraud and abuse, and we are leading the way when it comes to threat assessment and active shooter response. All of this adds up to a safer and more secure Monroe County. I am honored by the trust and confidence that you've placed in me to serve as your sheriff, and I ask that you renew that trust again with your vote on Election Day.
Thank you,
and may God bless each and every one of you.
Thanks, Sheriff O'Flynn. And now, Todd Baxter.
This campaign comes down to one thing, leadership. We mentioned that word a lot tonight, leadership. Leadership on the combat of opioids, 169 deaths. I do not consider that success. Leadership and transparency when bad things happen inside the Sheriff's Department and being open and forth with the community. Leadership by endorsing your deputies and fighting for what they need so they can stay on board in your organization. As sheriff, you're gonna find me walking the four corners of Penfield, Genesee Street, the jails. You'll find me out in the community. That's what leaders do. You're visionary and you lead from the front. I'm very excited about this opportunity that you provided for me to share my vision for the Sheriff's Department with the community. I wish we had more opportunities like this, but that, unfortunately, this is the only one. So with that, I'd extend a sincere thank you to Voices of the Voter for this opportunity, and you can have a great night. Consider voting for me on November 7th, please.
All right, thank you to you both. That concludes tonight's Voice of the Voter debate. The candidates for Monroe County Sheriff, Todd Baxter and Patrick O'Flynn. Also, thank you to the citizens who participated and followed us this evening in our various platforms, Twitter and beyond. Our panel of journalists, Carlette Claire of 13 WHAM and Gary Craig from the Democrat and Chronicle. Remember, if you're not sure where you need to go to vote on Election Day, which is Tuesday, November 7th, you can head to Monroe County's website, the address monroecounty.gov. There you'll find a link to check your voter information. Important to know before you head out on Election Day. I'm Evan Dawson from WXXI. Have a good night. Remember, you've got a right to vote. Exercise it on November 7th.